everyone, and welcome to the Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by Elec 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and the 97.5 Network, ready to help you move into the weekend talking about all the news in the world of sports. What a week, Jeff. What a week.
Yeah, I guess you're not going to ask me about Thursday night football. And quite frankly, you know, everybody knows my answer. I didn't watch Thursday night football. So I think the best thing for us to do is to just move on to another topic and a great guest.
I'm more interested in just starting the show talking some basketball. We are lucky enough to be joined by the new assistant general manager for the Delaware Bluecoats and a scout for the Sixers, Jameer Nelson. Jameer, thanks so much for your time. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. How about you guys, man? I appreciate you having me on.
We're very excited to have you. Jeff and I covered the Bluecoats for a little bit. It's exciting to see you get that position. I did want to ask you, how cool is this? You're from Chester. You sort of always been a Sixers fan. Could there be a better spot for you?
No, I mean, it was for me, the Sixers growing up, and as a player, it was Orlando. So either one of those two spots, and you know, the sweet thing is, like you said, I'm from Chester, grew up watching the Sixers. So, you know, Orlando will be my second place, but I'm obviously a homebody because I've, you know, high school, college, and always watched the Sixers and been a fan, even from afar.
You know, can you talk about sort of what we should look forward to from you in the role? You bring a special eye to the game, the knowledge and experience you have, how you look at it. What can people expect to see from Jameer Nelson as you come in and learn this new role for yourself?
Well, I mean, I'm still new at the job, so I'm learning a lot. You know, every day is a new learning experience for me. All the situations I go through are going to be new. But, you know, I was hired to be me. And, you know, I feel like people think I have a good, high basketball IQ and a good eye for the game. And, you know, I can recognize talent with that. So, you know, like I said, I'm just going to come and be myself and learn. I'm happy to be under guys like Elton, Doc, and Darren, and the rest of the crew that have been helping me out so far.
Jameer, you've been somebody who's been scouted. People have seen how you play basketball, and you've made it to the NBA. What is it like now for you to be in that other role where you're now going to be evaluating talent and you're going to be the one that kind of finds those diamonds in the rough? I mean, Jason and I, just so you know, if they haven't told you over at the Bluecoats, Jason and I actually tried out for the Bluecoats 1 year. So So if the coach hasn't informed you yet, I guess we're not on the list for being invited back. But what's it like to be in that position?
Now you neither one of your guys' name have come up yet. So if it does, I'll be first to inform you.
I'd like to point out, we may not be on your list. They've never told us we didn't make the team. I'm just saying.
Well, sometimes things are better unsaid than being said. You know, I guess the writing is on the wall, and I guess you can get the point. But no, I mean, it's different for sure because, you know, I've always wondered, like, what people thought about me, like, in these type of meetings. And, you know, I still don't know. But I know a little more what goes on and how to approach things. You know, I've always been able to, I guess, see talent when the talent was there. And always, you know, I've picked guys out and, you know, when I was playing, like, you know, see guys in college, I'm like, oh, he's going to be a great pro or he's not going to be. So, you know, it's a little bit of just having an eye, but also what you see and knowing how to translate a certain guy into a certain situation. I mean, you obviously have to I obviously have to think about the roster for the Bluecoats and the Sixers now and not just say generically, like, this guy can play in the NBA. Is can he play under our system? Can he play and grow in our system? Can he, you know, be a Sixer? I mean, it's so much that goes into it now for me, rather than just say, hey, this guy's an NBA player. I have to be more depth and have a lot more intel or give a lot more intel to the guys that make the decisions.
The Sixers and the Bluecoats are very active in the community, and you seem to be a welcome addition to the tradition of athletes using their platforms for positive change in the community. You were honored by the Philadelphia Freedom Valley YMCA for your work in Chester and Philadelphia areas, and you have a foundation, the Pete and Jameer Nelson Foundation. What is it like for you to be able to give back to the community?
So as a professional or a former professional athlete, that's part of the job. I mean, not everybody enjoys it and everybody does it, but you know, whether you like it or not, you are a role model in some people's eyes, and you are put in this position to help others. And it's not even necessarily just an economic thing. When you're talking about helping people, I can just, you know, go to somebody and talk to them and they feel a little more enlightened by the conversation we had just because of who I am. And that's part of it. So, you know, I use who I am and use what I've been through to try to help as many people as possible. I'm not going to be able to help everybody. But if I continue to try and, you know, being in a great organization like with, you know, historic organization like the Sixers, along with the Bluecoats, you know, they've done a great job of the community. I've paid attention to guys, and especially guys like Tobias Harris, who's really active. I just want to jump right in with these guys. I mean, and help. I mean, because like I said, I'm a homebody, you know, and that's one thing I want to do is helping the community as much as I can and where I can.
You know, you're somebody who's made an impact off the court, but obviously on the court in the city, made a name for yourself playing at St. Joe's for Coach Martelli. Remember that 27-0 season? We had Coach Martelli on a few weeks ago talking about their efforts with Coaches versus Cancer. What was it like for you to be able to play in front of your hometown and play with Coach Martelli? And what did he teach you that now you can start to implement as you go forward doing this?
Well, it was, you know, looking back on it, it was surreal because it could have went left so many different times. I was so close to home, you know, dealing with different things. But I just was a kid that I needed my family around, very family oriented. I needed my friends around. You just have to learn how to handle those things. And Coach told me a lot of things. It's not one thing. I mean, I can go on and talk to you how Coach is a professional in the NBA. I mean, you know, I was well prepared on and off the court to not necessarily to impress people, but just to let them know who I am. And I think that's the one thing that Coach Martelli did for me is allow me to be who I was as a person and as a player. And you know, he made the adjustments and he adapted. And that was to everybody, the entire team. It wasn't just for me. He's just a phenomenal person in terms of loving and caring. And that's another thing I could say about him. Like, I was talking to a buddy of mine who owns Collegeville Bakery, and he said it's amazing how Coach Martelli remembers everybody's birthdays and anniversaries and stuff like that. And that just tells you, this shows you who he is as a person, how loving, how caring he is. Because he doesn't have to reach out to people on their birthdays and anniversaries, but he does because it means that much to him and it's important to him. And he knows it's important to other people.
One of the things that you have been doing is, as somebody who's gone through the NBA experience, is you hosted the Jameer Nelson Lead Guard Invitational Camp, which was designed to give the invitees a window into the working life of a veteran pro. How do you plan to continue that effort and also to help the players that are going to be coming into the Bluecoats and hopefully moving up to the Sixers?
Well, that's a good question because it's high school kids. It's normally the best 15, 20 kids in the area. You know, we would treat them like they were in, I would say more college than professional. You know, we would have them, it was a lot of locker room talk, sit down and talk and, you know, me, you know, running my big mouth to them. Hopefully they got something out of it. They went through a different workout that I would go through in my career. You know, help them out, understanding like certain business aspects of life, also things that they may have not known about, you know, the process of getting to college. So we provided a lot of different things. I'm not sure how we'll move forward with it. Hopefully we can to move forward and grow it. You know, I've had people reach out and ask if they can take over. But that was something that was special to me and is special to me just because I felt like it was a little more intimate, more, you know, one-on-one attention when needed because it was such a small group. You know, so hopefully that can continue. But if not, you know, I'll try to get it into the right hands and give them a model because it works.
There's so many kids who come from, you know, have traveled the road that you've traveled. And so, you know, with camps like that, what's it mean for you to be able to work with kids? I mean, you talk about Coach Martelli and the people who helped you along the way. To be able to be that person back now, to help other kids be able to get on the path you did to achieve success on all levels.
Well, I've been very successful because of the people who were in my corner growing up, who helped me and paved the way for me. I mean, you got guys like Doug Overton, you got Coach Martelli. I mean, all the Chester greats, all the Chester coaches I've had, Larry Yarbrough, Fred Pickett, Keith Tell. I mean, the list goes on. The amount of people that supported me. So I'm you know, kind of taking pieces from everybody to try to help kids out. You know, I feel like it's not talked about enough, the amount of successful mentors that are out there in the inner cities. You know, we normally talk about the violence and the crime and the drugs and all that stuff that goes on, but it's a lot of positivity that goes on in yeah. You know, sports and music. You know, you in Chester, you have Jaleel Beach, who's done a great job in the community. You have a lot of different guys and girls or females who have put their fingerprints into the community, into a lot of different communities in a positive aspect. So I just want to, you know, be able to, one, like I said, help individuals can. But for those who paved the way and helped me, just honor them by giving back and giving what they taught me.
You know, a couple weeks ago, we talked to Aaron McKee about his growing up in the area and being a Sixers fan and getting to meet his boyhood idol in Dr. J. As somebody who grew up in the area, who was your favorite player growing up, and did you get a chance to meet him, and what was that experience like for you?
My favorite player growing up, three, and they're all from, well, two played for the Sixers, and one's from the area. So I'm all time Charles Barkley fan. Just love the way he played, love how hard he played, undersized. Second guy is Allen Iverson, but you know, got to meet both of those guys and play against AI a lot and talk to him one on one. You know, so that was a thrill for me. But the guy that we all Kobe Bryant, you know, the guy who he's the reason why guys spend so much money on their body and do things and in the off season the way they do. You know, he's a guy that I've talked to over the years, just about work ethic and mentality and you know, having those conversations, you know, whether he knew it or not, helped me out a lot.
I did want to ask you what it's been like. You know, you talk about Kobe and a lot of people focused on him being a father. You sort of had the same thing. I saw a quote from you when you were sort of finishing your playing career that for 14 years, everything was about you. Everybody supported you. And now it was time for you to support everybody else. It's been like to be able to be back there more as a dad with your kids. I know your one son plays basketball. Kids are involved in sports. How special is that for you to be able to be involved in their lives?
It's great, man. I mean, you know, the one thing is we have kids. If you guys have them, they don't ask to be in the world. You know, we bring them to the world, and we have to provide for them. We have to be there for them. We have to protect them and push them in the right direction. And when you're playing 82 game season, you know, it's about you. It's about, I need to take my nap. I need to eat right. So now I have to, you know, I had to come home and figure out, you know, and I've always felt like I was a pretty good father to my kids and very supportive. But now it was more geared and everything was more tailored to them, trying to help them achieve their goals and accomplish things they wanted to accomplish. I mean, for instance, my son stopped playing basketball. Stopped playing baseball to focus on basketball. And then I was able to see his entire senior season. We watched a ton of film, things I couldn't do before. We talked about the game differently because I was at every game. I mean, even for my daughters, I have three daughters and they're softball players. So, over the last 3 years, I've probably seen 400 or 500 softball games, somewhere close to that. So just that support there and getting in the car. And then for me, it's like, I don't talk to my kids about their games after the game. It's more about, did you have fun? And what are we going to eat? You know, if they want to talk about the game, they talk about it. If not, we move on and we try to get better at it.
We always enjoy hearing the stories of family and sports. Jeff coached his son. My kids are still pretty young, so we'll see how that works out. I always joke if they're like me, they've got no shot to actually play. But you give me hope because you made it so far in the NBA. We wish you the best of luck in the new position as assistant general manager and look forward to talking to you more as we go forward. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here on the show.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Jeff, what a cool thing. Grew up Sixers fan, now back here with the Sixers organization. And you asked him, did you get to meet people that you looked up to growing up? And he got to do that for all of them.
I just think this is another cool example of a guy who came up in this community, gave back to the community, still gives back to the community, and now has a chance to find a new level of a career. I mean, this is a guy who was successful in the NBA. He was clearly successful around here in college. And now he's moving on to a career as an assistant GM, kind of following in the footsteps of Elton Brand. Elton Brand wasn't, but Jameer is a local guy who's going to learn the inner workings of a really good organization. And maybe someday he's a president somewhere else. I mean, hopefully he gets to stick around here, but it's a pretty cool experience to watch a guy continue to find levels of success. And for people who, think that athletes are just athletes, not only does he do work off the court, but he's found a pretty amazing career after his days in the NBA are over.
I would like to point out,
yeah,
he still didn't say I didn't make the team.
Well, see,
things are better left unsaid.
You know, I don't know if you're doing me a favor or if you're not when you sit there and say that we haven't been told, because that's technically not true. Hunter Johnson, who's the head coach, did come on the show after the tryout and pointed out that I did not make the team.
Well, so, I'm trying not to single out that you didn't make the team, but there's still a chance I may have. I'm trying
But the question is did they tell me because I actually went through with the out, or did they tell me because they wanted to smack me down and you really do have a chance? Because they seem to have opened this door in your mind.
No, there's
still hope. You still have hope. My hopes were dashed, 30 years ago and got dashed again at the age of 50.
Look, my hopes were dashed on the day I was born. There was never any hope any professional sports.
Your hopes, at least at that practice, at that tryout, were dashed after like the calisthenics portion.
No, I did the calisthenics. It was when they asked me to dribble through my legs. That was when everybody really got a good laugh.
I do have to thank my son who came to memorialize that. And we do have video, but I don't think we'll be putting that out except when I need to blackmail you.
Oh, no. I think that we should put out video of both of us because I never expected to be anything good.
Yeah.
But the video of you getting dunked on, I could just watch on repeat. So we're good with that.
And the slow-mo version of it.
Why don't we talk for a few minutes before we get JP Della Camera on the show? You and I were in the stadium on Sunday. It was both of ours first time back in the stadium since like last March.
It was a weird, I don't know about you, like, I've had one other stadium experience, which was to go to the Iron Pigs and watch a movie on the big screen. And it was just being back in a facility, a sports facility, was kind of surreal. And that was an amazing experience because it's just being back there. And that also was watching them out of my home, which was another great thing. This was, now we're watching a soccer match, and it wasn't just a soccer match. This was a soccer match for the Shield. I mean, it's not a small thing, and it was pretty cool to see it. It would have been nice to have a stadium full. Certainly we understand why it wasn't, but for the fans who did get to be there, they certainly were loud. They certainly were supportive, and they got to see something pretty darn amazing.
They were nervous at the start of the game, though. Before that first Santos goal to start the game, people were a little bit nervous.
And it was a little chippy. And look, they didn't have their starting goalie, and the backup goalie did an incredible job.
Let's bring on Union play-by-play broadcaster. Among the things that he does and calls is Jeff puts on his Philadelphia
Union hat. Just for JP.
Eddie, JP Della Camera, thank you so much for a few minutes. How are you doing today?
Jason and Jeff, how are you guys?
We're good. We got to see, and I wonder how special it is for you, this team for so long, to see them hold up this supporter shield the other day. What was that like for you to watch? I know you're not supposed to, you know, be partial or everything, but right. This has been a labor of love for you for a long time with this organization too. What was that like?
Right. Well, you can be more partial when you're watching it as a fan, you know, when you're sitting at home, as I was watching it on ESPN. It was a moment of joy for me, not really for me, for the players, for Jim Curtin, for the coaching staff, for the ownership group, for all of the people that work there behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. It was a moment for all of them, and so I felt great supporting them. I knew what it meant to all of them. I would think especially somebody like Jim Curtin, who has been with this team for, what, now 7 years or so, and he's fought his way through. There were times when the talent wasn't there, like it is now. You know, there were times when the money wasn't spent, like it is now, and he persevered. And full credit to him, and that team plays so hard for him.
We talked to Coach Curtin last week about when he knew that this team could accomplish what it is now accomplished. For somebody who sees as much soccer as you see and calls as much soccer as you call in the world, and then also with the Union, when did you know, if you knew, that this was a team that could accomplish this goal?
I think last year is when I really knew that things were definitely on the right path. You know, before, I think you can become great. I don't think you become great overnight. I think you become good first and then consistently good, and then you become great, right? So now, you know, we've watched this team. This is 5 times they've been in the playoffs, 3 straight, including this year, 4 years out of the last 5. So if you make the playoffs in 4 of your last, I got to think that you're being close to consistently good. And when I saw what they did last year, they finished in 3rd. There were times where they were in 2nd place last year and 1st place. I saw they kept the core pretty much together. It was the biggest loss, but they kept the core group together. And then they added pieces that we didn't know how good they were going to be honest. But once you saw how good Glesnes was or was going to be, once you saw how good Jose Martinez was going to be, you know, once you saw the improvement of a Mark McKenzie and a Brendan Aaronson, you knew this was a real winning team. And if things went right, that they definitely had a shot at 1st place. And then, of course, the supporter shield. But I think that you became a believer earlier this season, more of a believer during the tournament in Orlando, and then even more of a believer when they got off to a good start when the league started to announce the rest of the schedule kind of piece by piece.
You know, we've talked to many of the Union personnel about the idea of the process. The Sixers kind of were the team that formed this idea of a process. But when you look at the Union and the way that they have built this team, from youth to bringing in people from the outside to the coaching staff to the front office, what's it been like to watch this process play out as perfectly as it has?
I think it's been rewarding. It's rewarding for me to see it work because it's not the way other teams, right? And I'm not critical of other teams the way they've done it. It'd be great to be Atlanta United, right, and have that early success, and they spent a fortune. But then look at what happened to them this year. They were not built to sustain that, you know. I look at teams like the Seattle Sounders, to me, are a team to win because, what is it, 12 straight years they've made the playoffs. And they do spend money on designated players. They do make trades. They spend more money probably than a lot of teams do, but they're not irresponsible with it. And they're consistently good, right? So I think instead of an expansion team coming into the league and saying, I want to be like Atlanta United, I'd rather say I want to be like the Seattle Sounders because they had a good team at the start and they've been consistently good. To me, that's the measure. I would have said, measuring stick, but realistically, you know, Atlanta's first couple of years were lights out with the money that they were spending and the crowds that they were drawing. Not everybody could go for that model, and that model broke down this year. So I think with Philadelphia, they were always interested in the academy. They were one of the teams that spent the most money. They and FC Dallas have spent the most money, not only spent the most money in the and also use those players, which shows that they believed in the academy. So it's nice to see that that has worked, but it has taken time, right? Because you couldn't start like five players off of their academy team in 1 year and have half of your team or more be academy players. You're not going to succeed in MLS. It's going to be a rough year, but you can certainly have a few players or a few homegrown players. And that's what the team did this year. There were times where they had maybe four homegrown players in their starting 11. I mean, that's remarkable when you think about it. And those kids all did well. So I think the model is working. I think the fact that they could sell Brendan Aaronson for the $6 million, which will end up being closer to $9 or $10 million, shows that it really is working. And now it's up to the team to reinvest that money so that they can keep this model going. And I think under the ownership group that they have, which was expanded when they brought in Kevin Durant, and under the direction of Ernst Tanner, who I think has done a marvelous job, Chris Albright helping him out there, I think that they're on the right path to continued success.
I feel like with the success of the team, you're going to get some newer fans. So, you know, everybody loves a winner. For fans who aren't as familiar with soccer and only see the fact that the Union are losing a rising star with Brendan Aaronson to a European club, can you talk about why it's important that the Union's able to develop talent that they can then loan or sell to other teams and how that will help the team grow in the long run?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's the business model throughout the world, right? That's what all clubs do, whether it's Real Madrid or Barcelona or Manchester United or Paris Saint-Germain. You know, they buy and sell players. That's what they do. In our country and other sports, we make trades, right? But in other countries, it's different. It's buy and sell. And the best way to make money on this is to really develop your own players, right? Because if Brendan goes through the academy, however they figure out their costs, they're making maybe $9 or $10 million on one player. If you sold a veteran player, let's say on the Philadelphia Union, pick a player, you're not going to get $9 or $10 million for that player. There's no way that's going to happen, right? Because of a player's age and that there's other players that you could buy at that level. Right now, especially I would say with COVID, I think teams have to be more practical with the money overseas. So, for instance, Pavone from the LA Galaxy, the team that owns him in South America, wanted $20 million. Well, the Galaxy, in the best of situations, would not want to pay $20 million, right? And in the best of situations, the club that owns Pavone wouldn't lower the price. But I think you'll see that price lowered, and I'm hoping that he stays with the LA Galaxy because I think that the money is different now. So if you're the team in Austria, the Red Bull Salzburg team, if you could buy Brendan Aaronson for $6 million, and we say $6 million again, it's going to be up to 9 or 10, but it's less risky for them to take a young player that's 19 or 20 years of age and spend $6 million on them than it is for them to spend $15 million on somebody more proven. I think that's just the economic model that we see today. And Salzburg is one of those teams that buys and sells players too. So I don't know how long Brendan will play there. My guess is that if he's successful, and we hope and believe he will be, that he'll be there for 1 year, maybe two, and they'll make more money selling him, and then they'll look for the next guy. Maybe it'll be Brendan's brother.
So that leads to the question of, once you lose Brendan through this process, we know his younger brother is now in there, but
yep,
the
Paxton,
rest
yep.
of the program, the rest of the academy, what is it like for a team to have to then find somebody to fill the spot that Brendan has grown into? For people that don't watch soccer day to day and don't know this whole system, they just get frustrated because now they're losing somebody that they just bought a jersey of.
Okay. That's a good point. Forgot about the jerseys. I think that, you know, when you look at it logically, right, the union must feel one of two things. They know that if they lose Brendan Aaronson, they lose a talented starter. So they must feel that either they do have a young player, maybe it's his brother, Paxton, who could take Brendan's place, but they also know that if they don't have another player, that that's true. But if they don't have another player, let's say, they now made between $6 and $9 million. They now have several months to go find another player while that next academy player develops, right? I mean, Brendan was good last year, but he's been more than good this year, right? We can see the jump in his game, you know, from 1 year to another, right? Could Brendan have played more 2 years ago? Probably not. You know, I mean, they're watching these guys closely. So I think Paxton probably plays a different position. He's a different type player than Brendan. So I'm not saying he's the guy. I have no idea who the guy is that will replace Brendan Aaronson. But they're going to probably need a guy to replace Mark McKenzie too, because I think he'll be the next guy that's sold, because he's that good and he's had that good of a year, and that he's no secret anymore. Teams in Europe know who he is. So I think, you know, for the Union fans that maybe, or soccer fans or sports fans that don't understand, you know, losing one player here and there, they might have to get used to it, because the more successful these young homegrown players are, the more likely it is that they'll play in Philadelphia for 1 year, 2 years, maybe three, and then go overseas. The team makes money with that sale, and it goes from there. And think about it this way too, guys. If you're a young academy player and you're wondering, am I going to chance to play with the Philadelphia Union? First of all, the answer is yes, because you see how many homegrown players they've used. And then second, if you're thinking, you know, could the Union be a pathway to something even bigger? You can check that box too, because anybody that's playing in that Union Academy that saw Brendan Aaronson start a lot of games last year, become an everyday starter this year, and get a contract to play overseas starting in January, that's a win-win for anybody that's in the academy.
So we're on the international break now. Before we come back, the Union will have their first home playoff game November 24th. Looks like they'll be without Jamiro Montero and Olivier Mbazio because they're international call-ups right now. Question about whether Andre Blake will be back. Coach said if everything goes smoothly, he thinks he'll be ready. We expect to see that first home playoff game out of this team.
What do I expect to see? Well, I hope I don't see rust, because you got to remember this, right? They're going to play, what is it, the lower seed of the I don't have the matchups in front of me, but they're going to play.
If Nashville wins, they would play the New England-Montreal winner. If Miami wins, then the Union would play Miami.
Right. So either way, right, it's going to be a lesser team, right? But that team will have played one more game, right, than Philly to qualify, right, to get to the round that they need to go to. So you've got that sort of going against you. I think that, you know, you might see some rust from the two teams. I don't know what the COVID situation is going to be like, you know, whether the guys you mentioned will be able to get through quarantine and be able to play. I hate to say this, guys, but I mean, I just saw on the internet that Mo Salah tested positive. Like, you know, you've got guys going overseas now that checked out with a negative result when they were here. They go overseas, they play for the national team, and they come back with a positive test. So we don't know what COVID's going to do. Hopefully it doesn't do anything to the MLS Cup playoffs. But, you know, speaking of that too, I just saw today where Seattle had a player that tested positive. So, you know, it's the COVID reality. But I think that I was asked this yesterday. There are a lot of good teams in MLS. A lot of teams can win MLS Cup. If things go Philadelphia's way, if Philadelphia gets Andre Blake back, and I think they will, but if they do get the Andre Blake of 2020 back, that gives them a leg up on everyone else because I think he's clearly been the best goalkeeper in the league. If they get Blake back and they play their game, they'll have home field advantage no matter what all the way through. They have as good a shot as anyone to win MLS Cup, and a lot of the experts, you know, that lay the odds on this are picking Philadelphia to win. That's pressure, right? And Jim Curtin said they're not used to that role right now, but they are among the favorites. I mean, anybody that says they're not among the favorites now would be spinning the truth the opposite way, right? Because they are, have to be considered one of the favorites after winning the Supporters' Shield. And you guys were at the stadium the other day. I'm watching it on TV, but I can hear those 3,000 fans. There is a home field advantage. There's a home field advantage, and, you know, hopefully the politicians will let more people in if it's safe. I must say that, if it's safe, because I don't want it to happen if it's not safe. But those 3,000 people sounded a lot louder. They came through in my television set. So the Philly fans that were there should be proud of what they've done. The only thing bad about this year is because of COVID, not as many people could see the games in person. I'm told that the TV ratings were the highest that they've ever been, and that's, I'm sure it's because, you know, especially on those home games, right? Instead of fans being in the stands, they're watching the games on TV. So I think that, you know, we've retained some fans that way. I hope we've made more fans that way. And when COVID goes away, as we expect it to sometime in 2021, you'll see the 19,000 plus at Subaru Park game in and game out because they've got something very good to watch.
I think you're definitely building more fans, something special for us all to watch. We look forward to following it go forward in the playoffs. Thanks always for some time, and I look forward to talking to you, and you can explain it all to us as we go through. Thanks so much for the time, JP. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, call me anytime, guys. Thank you. My pleasure.
Jeff, always fun to hear from JP, his take on everything. We'll break down the soccer when we finish, but we're going to roll right into our next interview because, Jeff, you're going to sleep outside again this week, again. And we've got Dan Esposito on the line from the NFL Alumni Association, who is also going to be sleeping out. So we've got the NFL Alumni Association team. Dan Esposito, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing awesome. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, other than the fact that Jeff looked at the weather forecast before the show and realized it's going to be about 20 degrees when you guys sleep out on Thursday. Though,
that's the best way to do it.
There should not be precipitation like the one year that Jeff did it where his cardboard box disintegrated and his shoe split. So can you talk a little bit about the NFL Alumni Association involvement with Covenant House, why this is important? Then we'll let Jeff talk with you about what you guys are actually doing.
Sure. So the NFL alumni's mission statement is caring for our own and caring for kids. So, you know, obviously kids, Covenant House caters to kids, you know, up through their very early 20s. So these are children who may be experiencing a rough time at home. Maybe mom got a new boyfriend that doesn't like the 16-year-old boy and they throw him out on the street. Maybe there's no electricity in the home, you know, or water, or just abusive situations, et cetera. So I was, you know, obviously played a little bit in the NFL, and I was on the board of the NFL alumni, and I met with a friend of mine, and he was telling me about the sleep out that he was doing. And leading up to this point, I had always wondered about what happened to, you know, older kids in the foster care system. I was always kind of thinking, hey, I should adopt a kid at some point. And then I start going through the ages of what, you know, age would be appropriate. And then I got to 17. I said, gosh, what happens to a kid at 18 years old if they're in the foster care system? And the harsh reality is they're just shown the door, right? And so a lot of these kids are still in high school. They have no means, nowhere to go afterwards, no relatives that can take them on in a lot of situations, no established friends because of the movement in their lives. And I thought, well, if I can't adopt, this would be a very great next option for me, and to tie it in with the NFL alumni because of the mission of the NFL alumni. So about, I think it was 3 years ago, I did my first sleep out. Jeff joined, which was awesome. And unfortunately, COVID hit this year, and it has made just fundraising in general very difficult. So, you know, donations are down tremendously this year. So if any of your listeners want to either help with donations or even sharing the link to our Sleep Out fundraising page on their social media to maybe try to hope, you know, raise a few, you know, few more dollars for this great cause, because these are kids in our neighborhoods that once given this opportunity to stay at Covenant House, which is basically like a college dorm situation. It's not a shelter where they come and go. They stay there. They're given the resources to succeed. They get job opportunities. They take jobs. And at some point, they're then moved out into their own apartment where they pay rent on a monthly basis. And then once they can move out into their own apartment that's not tied to the Covenant House, Covenant House gives them back all their rent money that they had paid and gives them a nice little nest egg to move on. So a lot of these kids have done some really amazing things. They've become assistant executive chefs. Some kids have, gone on to college, while previously they were homeless for half of their senior year. So they really give the right tools to kids in our local communities so they can succeed in life and be a positive force in our communities rather than a negative force.
You know, it's when Jeff did it, we talked about what the experience was like. What's it like for you when you stay out? The whole idea is that you're supposed to get a little taste of what it is like that someone experiences.
Yeah. The problem,
what's that like for you?
Yeah. Yeah. So the problem with doing it this way is where you were going to go sleep out for a night is that it's rough. Except that you don't get to experience the anxiety of not knowing where your place is in the world, not knowing where you're going to sleep or eat, right? It's a tough moment in our lives, but it's only a singular moment. And the reality of it is last year when I went to go sleep and I got back into my box, it literally felt like the next day, right from the year previous. But it was kind of, in a weird way, comforting to be able to just go into that box and you know, think about what's, you know, just kind of your life and how lucky you've been. But you don't truly get to experience the full 360 emotional impact that having no home could be. And you know, interestingly enough, I ran away for a day once when I was in, you know, maybe I think it was middle school. And so I kind of understand that piece, but I always knew that I had, you know, I went home later that night. And so you understand that to a degree when that happens to you, but, you know, it's almost, honestly, it's an experience that it toughens you up a little bit, but you really don't experience what a homeless kid is going to be able to go through.
You know, I'm gonna let Jeff talk. Jeff, why don't you talk for a couple seconds? Then we'll do our read for as we go online more. Then we'll come back and we'll finish it.
Yeah, you know, I've had the fortune to do this with Dan. Dan came into our show and talked me into doing it. It's the most rewarding thing I've probably ever done. But to couple with what Dan said, we got to go home and take a shower after, and it was a nor'easter, and it was the worst night of the year to be out. But we got to go home and eat and take a shower. And all I kept thinking when I left there was, these kids then have to find someplace the next night. They have to find a bridge to sleep under. They have to make sure that somebody's not going to steal from them or hurt them the next night. And the cause is so important in the work that the NFL Alumni Association and the Covenant House does is so important. And the fact that Dan's another example of another former athlete who's giving back to the community and how he's using his platform for positive change.
Jeff, I want to go back to you guys to talk more about what this means. You were saying you can't go home and you can go home and get a shower. You can go home and get a hot meal. Not everybody can.
No, I mean, that's the whole point of this. I remember, Dan, I don't know if people texted you, but I remember when we did it the night of the Nor'easter, that people kept texting me and emailing me during the day saying, there's a Nor'easter tonight, or are they going to reschedule it for another night? And right. My response to every one of them was, well, what would be the point? They don't get to decide when they sleep outside.
Right.
What was it like for you to do that, Dan?
So for me, it almost felt like a duty, right? You know, I can't really explain in words unless you experience it, because you really don't know what you're in for when you go to do it. But when you sit there in that homeless moment, and once again, you're surrounded by like-minded, charitable people in that situation. You're not surrounded by potentially other homeless people that might be having mental health issues and drug issues and, you know, things like that. So, you know, there's a sense of duty that comes with it, that, you know, here's this one night where I'm going to raise some money to provide, you know, hopefully a way out for one kid. But I mean, I got to be honest with you, it almost felt like camping physically, but emotionally there was so much more tied to it, if that makes any sense. I don't know if you felt the same way, Jeff.
No, I did. And we did have the fortune of meeting some of these amazing kids that have gone through the Covenant House and come out the other side, and kids that were in the beginning of that journey. And also, just as important, meeting the people that are there, that do the work day to day, from providing meals and someplace to sleep, but also education training and job training.
Yep.
I mean, this isn't a situation where these kids just come in, sleep and eat. These kids are during the day are supposed to leave, and they're supposed to go to school, and they're supposed to find jobs, and then they pay it forward. And so one of the things that has always struck me about you and many of the former athletes that we talk to is how you use that platform. How important is it for you, and how important do you think it is for other athletes to use the platform that they have to do the kind of things that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, the NFL alumni is involved in a lot of children's charities, and I think that you'll find in a lot of cases, a lot of athletes, former athletes, may have grown up in similar situations to the charities that were supporting, you know, other, you know, like Big Brothers and, you know, a lot of foster care charities, et cetera. You know, I don't want to make it personal, but personally, I kind of grew up in an abusive family relationship, and that, you know, I was fortunate enough that I didn't have to leave the home except for that one instant where I ran away. But, you know, when I sit there and apply what could have been to my own life with just maybe one more bad situation, I could have been truly homeless or, you know, God knows whatever else. And so once you place yourself in these kids' situations and know that my situation was no fault of my own and that their situation is no fault of their own, and in a lot of cases, it may not even truly be the parents' fault, because a lot of these parents might be dealing with mental health issues that they don't have access to any help for. So there's just so much to it, and you really put a lot of deep thought into it and, you know, what the kids must be going through. You know, and there's, I mean, that's, I don't know if that answers your question completely, but you just really feel empathy toward these children. And I think, like I said, a lot of former athletes grew up poor and in tough situations. So it really gives us an outlet to, one, because we're former NFL players, to bring a little bit bigger spotlight on it, And that's what my goal is. You know, listen, I wasn't a Hall of Fame player. I barely played two seasons. I had four contracts and two broken jaws and shoulder surgeries. But I am able to leverage the NFL alumni platform to give the Covenant House a little bit more of a spotlight. So that's for me, it is gratifying.
Well, we're going to make sure we put the Covenant House information out on our social accounts so that people can follow. Jeff's got his fundraiser up there. Jeff, I believe you're already over $5,000 in donations.
Oh,
gotta
my
keep
Lord.
Your goal there.
Wow.
Yeah, Jeff's awesome. Working it, Dan. You gotta keep up with him. He's working it hard. He even hit me up, and he knows that I'm cheap.
So,
I did want to get, you know, we have somebody with NFL experience, unlike Jeff and myself, on the phone here. Let's talk a little Eagles Giants real fast. Giants, the Eagles come in at 3-4-1, look to get to 500. You have had some opinions about the Eagles quarterback. I will openly admit I have been a Wentz backer. I have my Wentz wagon t-shirt. I certainly have concerns about his decision-making, and I'm puzzled by some things. Can you tell me your opinions about Carson Wentz and what made you suggest that the Eagles may need to move on to Jalen Hurts?
Yeah. So what I see with Carson Wentz is somebody who's extremely gifted physically. But as I watch him play the position of quarterback in the NFL, there's a lot of deficiencies. If you look at his – well, let's just first kind of rule out a little bit of the fact that it's the offensive line's fault. There is definitely some ownership the offensive line has to take, but I believe that right now they are leading the league in average yards per carry. Is that correct? I don't know if you guys have that.
Assuming they hand off the ball. The problem is they don't hand off sometimes. Goes off.
That's because Carson Wentz likes to get us in really bad field positions, right? You know, third and long, fourth, you know, second and long, et cetera. And what I see from him is he has a safety net in Zach Ertz, right? It's the only place I see him actually audible to. I don't ever see him audible to, and it's usually audibling to him between the numbers, right? It's not out routes or quick outs or a quick out by a slot receiver, anything like that. It's audible. The ball's almost always going to Zach Ertz. The problem with Zach Ertz as your only safety net and as being a tight end is he's got amazing hands, but what I call spaghetti legs, right? He's never running far after the catch, right? He's not like the other tight ends that we see in the league that are doing really well, like the tight ends in San Francisco and Kansas City. So, you know, you're limited in the playmaking ability if you're leaning on that guy so much. But if he sees, you know, offensive linemen that might need some help or might need, you know, he may need to get rid of the ball quick, you just don't see him calling an audible to a hot read receiver. And that, to me, makes or breaks a quarterback in the NFL, is your ability to audible, not your ability to take two plays that the coach gives you and choose which the best one of those two plays are. It's your ability to see the field completely, to understand the matchups, and then to put your players in a position to make a play. And then let's talk about the wide receivers, right? We say the wide receivers aren't that great. Well, we had the top wide receiver free agent come in here a few years ago, and all of a sudden he's no longer productive. You see Nelson Aguilar leave, and all of a sudden he becomes pretty productive, right? So we see these, you know, signs that maybe it isn't the receivers. And the one thing that I wish you would see Carson Wentz do a little bit more is let the receivers make a play. All right, your receiver's covered, but everybody's covered in the NFL, right? You need to let them be wide NFL receivers and make plays. And if they don't make the plays, then that's on them. And so what I kind of see is Donovan McNabb 2.0, but rather than throwing the ball at everyone's feet, he's kind of overthrowing, you know, a lot of plays. And how often do we see him throw the ball downfield to stretch the field in a designed play that's not a broken play? And that's almost never. So I am completely not sold on this guy. I feel that he's regressed or barely moved forward, if at all, since his rookie year.
We've got 3 minutes left. I've said a few times to Jeff, I don't think anything's been the same since Frank Reich left. Now, granted, Carson is coming off an injury after that, but it doesn't seem like there's anybody there that's getting through to Carson. He just keeps saying, I got to change this. I got to stop making the same plays. If Carson is not audibling like you're talking about, how much is it on the head coach and the coaching staff to not call a 5 or 7 step drop when your line is a problem and call a rollout instead if you know he's not audibling?
Well, you have to play football, right? You can't be one-dimensional. Your players have to make plays, but then if they become out of position, it's the quarterback's job to recognize that, right? And say, oh, there's a blitz on. I better get out of this 5-yard drop or five-step drop. Or, there's a blitz on and it's 3rd and 15 and I'm going to audible to my tight end again who can't run after the catch. So that's where the problems, I think, lie. That's where the majority of the problems lie in my, when I see, what's going on. It's you're 3rd and 10. You got a blitz coming on. You need to isolate a receiver and let him make a play.
So, Dan, we got 90 seconds left. So the question is, yep. If you've been in the backfield, you're in these guys are in the middle of a playoff push, sadly, as it is with their record. When do you... As a player, how do you move on from Carson Wentz, who's got experience, and move on to Jalen Hurts in that situation?
I mean, what are we, 3-5? What's our record again?
3-4-1. Don't forget the tie.
Don't forget the tie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a loss, really. Was that, that tie, to a really terrible team. How do you move on? Just sort of in general, this is sort of a cut bait year anyway, right? So, I don't think there's any better time to do it now. And the division is so terrible that how bad could Jalen Hurts, if Jalen Hurts plays as well as Carson Wentz did in his rookie year, we'll be fine. And I think Jalen Hurts has more tools and a better feel for a football field.
All right, Dan's ready to hit the eject button. Jeff, we've got 30 seconds left. On TV. Your last word, Jeff is Jeff Dan predictions on the last 20 seconds. Eagles, Giants, who wins this weekend?
I think the Giants are actually going to win. The Giants have been pretty close in more recent games.
Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I still think the Eagles pull this out based on their defense, and I don't think. I mean, I like, the potential of Daniel Jones, but I don't think he's there just yet. But the guy does have, a good quarterback instinct. But I think the Eagles are still going to win this game.
I think the Eagles win, but it's going to be ugly because of the Giants defense. Yeah. That's going to be the last word. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week.
One more before we go. If you haven't done so, go to the Covenant House donate page and donate to whether it's Dan and my team or any place else.
Everybody have a great week.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Bye-bye, guys.